Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Good evening. Welcome to another edition of George Jackson University Radio. I'm your host, Brother Jonaku. I'm joined by my fellow host, Brother Bomani Shakur. We have another interesting and well-informative show for you this evening. I hope you all can hear me. I'm having a little technical difficulty with my phone, so hopefully everyone in the listening audience can hear me. Now before we get to our informative guest, I just want to do a little bit of sidebar, as I do sometimes. Now, as you know, some of you all may know, it's the Kwanzaa season, I believe on the second day of Kwanzaa. And like with most things involving African-Americans, black, new Africans, or what have you, there's often some controversy surrounding the issue. And I've been seeing some kind of just some interesting things just happen to me personally with regard to Kwanzaa. Like, I was in a postal place, and a lady said to me, I'm going to have a Merry Christmas, but you have a Happy Kwanzaa. Now, I understood where she was coming from, so I didn't really correct her. But my thing is, first of all, who says I don't celebrate Christmas? You know, Kwanzaa isn't a replacement for Christmas, and I'm not getting to the whole debate about should black people celebrate Christmas, all that type of stuff. That's not where I'm trying to go with this. But it always seems that we're always divided on stuff, you know. Kwanzaa is a religious celebration. You could be black, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever. It has nothing to do with religion. There's so many black people who shy away from Kwanzaa. I was heard about some debate going online. People were talking about, well, seeing how Malena Karanga, the founder of Kwanzaa, you know, he was some say he was a agent for the FBI, but you know he had the organization the United Slaves, the Black Panthers, who just know that some of the Black Panthers getting killed, there'll be between them. So I'm saying, some people are like, well, because of all that, you shouldn't celebrate Kwanzaa. Well, my thing is kind of like, okay, isn't that kind of like throwing out the baby with the bad water? Yeah, back in those days, you know, Malena Karanga did do some actions that are very questionable. But then at the same time, people would turn around and celebrate Malcolm X. Back in the day, he wasn't always righteous. He had been a pimp, a dope dealer, and all that. But people would still around and praise him. He turned his life around. So who say Malena Karanga didn't realize his mistakes that so many people made back then and, you know, make up for it? So why not celebrate Kwanzaa? You know, is, you know, my thing is, when you look at something, look at, is it useful? Is it beneficial? It didn't always matter where it came from. Is it something that can unite us now? So, I mean, I think for most of us new Africans in the movement now, look on our past lives, a lot of us were former gangbangers, former thugs and all that, but on the right path now, like George Jackson. he wasn't always in the right path. But look, but so should I say, I ain't going to read blood in my eyes for a dead brother because of what he was in his past? That's nonsense. So, I mean, so a lot of times I think people just put more thought into what they do and say before they say it, especially when it comes to things that could unify us. There's another point I wanted to make, Kwanzaa, about Kwanzaa. I kind of lost it, but, oh, yeah, there's another thing about this holiday season. And then I'm going to pass it on. I don't want to take up too much time on my soapbox, but I've been hearing people, I hear this envy of people debating about Black celebrating Christmas. I mean, my thing is, like I said, it depends on why you're doing it. You know, if you don't go out and spend a whole bunch of money and now back on business, no, you shouldn't celebrate it. But sometimes it's the holiday season that will push the Black businesses, keep them afloat. Because my thing is, people be talking, oh, yeah, how you celebrate Kwanzaa? You know, the Black male celebrating the Kwanzaa. But I'm like, okay, you take one day out the year to try to be conscious, but then 364 days of the year, you spend all your money with non-Black businesses. You're watching, going to the movies, support movies that aren't about Blacks, that are made by Blacks. You don't have a problem with doing that 364 days of the year. Then you take one day, try to be like, oh, I'm righteous, and you're not righteous, and you celebrate this. That's nonsense. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to have that type of mindset, have that mindset 365 days a year when you're conscious about where you spend the money or how your decisions plays into the role of the new African liberation. Just don't take one day out the year and be like, oh, man, you know, this ain't right. That's nonsense. It makes you look silly when you do that. So that being said, you know, I'm going to pass it on to my several hosts, Brother Bomani Shakur, and maybe if you all want to, towards the end of the show, we can explore these issues further because I'm always open to debate. This is just my thoughts on the issue. So without further ado, Brother Bomani, you online?
Yes, sir, I'm online, brother. How you doing, brother? Revolutionary greeting, brother. Free the land,
solid,
brother.
Solid as a rock.
True indeed, brother. Now, I was listening to your thoughts and statements in regard to what's going on, you know. Understand that. It's Kwanzaa season right now, you know, and understand that standpoint as well. And I also understand that the principles of Kwanzaa, they're an ancient principle that go back to antiquity in regard to our nation building, such as self-determination, such as unity, such as, you know what I'm saying, purpose and other things of that other aspects that relate to the Kiswahili language in regard to our struggle, especially when you go back to the aspects of the Bombas. I think the Kenya slave revolt, Henry slave, the peasant revolution, what they call the peasant revolt, you know. And I look at that situation like it's always something positive. You can get out of the negative. Plenty of something positive, you can get out of the negative. Even though I understand the situation in regard, he's talking about COINTELPRO and the pigs and, you know, the attacks on revolutionary movements and the controversy and the aspects of infiltration and the aspect of movements against movement in regard to the Black liberation movement, even up to this current state of time when you had new African movements and pan-African movements and other movements against each other over ideological differences and over factionalism, over sexism, and over aspects of divide and conquer tactics that have been utilized by the capitalist system with its tentacles, right? I want to say revolutionary greeting to all. I want to send a shout out to all the younger brothers and sisters from the age of 13 all the way to 25 who educate themselves on the aspect of knowledge of self, who not just believing in the stuff they tell them in school, if it's high school, middle school, if it's college, if it's university, not believing in, they're making their own research. I want to send a shout out to all the political prisoners in the war, say free them all, especially all our comrades who have paved the way. And the Black Liberation Movement, the New African Independent Movement, Pan National Movement, and the Human Rights Movement. I was at free lines to all those who identify with land. I was sending a shout out to all the listeners and callers, and I'm sending a shout out to all the students that enrolled in Georgia University who making the opportunity to educate themselves from a criminal mentality to a revolutionary mentality, which Conrad George Jackson did, whether Malcolm X and other brothers like that, such as Jane Carter, Edgar Cleveland, other people who were considered criminal, Baba Seko Ndinga, the ancestral Lumumba Shakur, other individuals who were involved in street organizations, involved in gang banging, involved in criminal activities, who made a kind decision to educate themselves, because like John Henry Clark said, the answer is educated for liberation. I'd like to bring onto the show tonight a brother who's been working on the ground a lot, and he's actually been living up to the principles of self-determination, one of the principles of Kwanzaa. I bring onto the show tonight brother Khalil Kuno. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, brother. Good to be here.
True indeed, brother. Good to have you on, brother. First, can you tell people about a little bit about your little background, how you came up, a little bit about your background before we start off? Your history is like a brief bio,
little
so to speak.
Bio. So originally from Los Angeles, California. Folks who was both sides of the family, parents was in the movement, going back to the 60s. So definitely a child of the movement, someone who grew up, in the culture, in the mix, in the meeting, as a child, you know, taking it all in, learning, absorbing, went to African schools when I was a child, taught a range of Swahili, Yoruba, Arabic when I was a child. So grew up, being exposed to that. Did a lot of traveling when I was a child. It definitely broadened my understanding and horizons. Taught me a lot about the empire, which is invaluable. From that, pursued my own studies basically from the time of a teenager. One of the critical things that was a real turning point for me in terms of just biography, so folks know, was the 1984 Olympics that happened in Los Angeles. And people might say, well, why? And one of the critical things that I observed with my own eyes then, which helped me to really absorb, the teachings that I was surrounded by, the politics that I was being surrounded by, where it moved it from just kind of, some things that might seem abstract to a child to making it real and concrete. And that was, watching over a course of a 3-month period, the LAPD basically just rounding up thousands of young, primarily brothers, but not exclusively, off the streets of Los Angeles to make way for kind of an exclusive control over the underground economy. And what that revealed to me was the depth at which they understood who was who, what was what, the depth at which they actually controlled, particularly the flow of most people call it drugs, it was chemical and biological warfare, and were directly involved in it, which means pretty much, I got a quick understanding from what happened then. They could control the situation at their will. And so what was happening in the streets, the carnage that was happening in the streets of Los Angeles, I quickly grew to understand it was something that was not only being allowed, but was something that was in fact being planned and orchestrated. So that was probably, I would say, if there's an event, what sharpened up my politics and put me on a clear political path was seeing that with my own two eyes and how that worked out, and having members of my family, ranging from their 40s to teenagers, being rounded up, being detained, almost all with no charges, but just to get them off the streets, to make the streets of L.A., quote unquote, peaceful and pacified, so that, tourists from all over the world could come in and see, this pristine Los Angeles, where they only regulated the control of drugs and the sex trade, to the areas that were they deemed to be safe, sound, and was firmly not only under their control, but under their exclusive profit. Reaping. So that was something that sharpened up a number of things for me that has always carried clear weight about, who the enemy is, the nature of the state, what its actual reach is, what it really can do, what it has the capacity to do, how intelligence works, in this empire, and whose interest does it serve, and the nature of the long protracted struggle that we are in fact in, and how they can manipulate different conditions to their will to shape our wills, and bend our wills in their service. So, those are some basic things that I would really point to. And then just coming up in the movement, more directly became a member of the Malcolm X grassroots movement while in college in the 1990s, and been deeply involved, in the organized resistance of our people ever since. Finally settled down after coming in and out of Jackson for many years. Finally settled down here in 2013 to help advance a plan that the organization had really crafted right after Hurricane Katrina, called the Jackson-Cush Plan. So after some years of making a commitment to move here, finally put all the pieces together with the family and made their trek down in a final sense in 2013. And since that time, first was working in the administration with Chokwe Lumumba when he was doing his brief stint when he was the mayor of the city. But since that time, primarily, my focus has been pretty narrow in the sense, not narrow in what we've been trying to do and what the objective is, but kind of pared down in terms of just really trying to build Cooperation Jackson to be an instrument of the Jackson Cush Plan, particularly to develop co-ops and the solidarity economy to put our people on a sound economic footing to be able to, wage the struggle and engage in the war that we are in on a sound material basis. So that's a little bit of my background and focus just for the audience to know and digest.
Okay. My first question is, what organization were your parents involved with that helped you further your political education?
The one that I could speak to is the African People's Party. That was, for those who don't know, the African People's Party was an offshoot of the Revolutionary Action Movement, which officially dissolved in 1968. And the majority of members then formulated a new Revolutionary Nationalist organization, initially called the All African People's Party. But to distinguish it from the All African People's Revolutionary Party, which kind of began to really firmly take root in the United States after Kwame Ture came back from Guinea, started doing some organizing to distinguish themselves, kind of from each other, which is similar in many respects, but also different in some critical respects. And so that's the organization that they primarily work with. But, folks also did a lot of work with the provisional government. Folks were also involved with the Black Panther Party, for self-defense. And remember, that had a real complicated history in Los Angeles, as it did all over the place, to be told. Also, some my uncle in particular was actually involved in the US organization during its early stages and phases. But unfortunately, my family's had a lot of conflict with Karanga over the years, some of which, has been healed, some of which is not. But, it's all part of that weave of, folks being based in Los Angeles, at a particular place and time. But then growing in their politics, from there to touch on things, far beyond just their own cadre of mass-based organizations, but international engagement. And parents, my mother, and particularly my uncle, deeply involved in the anti-apartheid struggle going back to the 70s. And my uncle played some key role in that on an international level, which gave me a good solid foundation in the development of my internationalist politics, you know, as a youngster in the 1980s, to really understand, you know, the connections to what was going on, you know, in the Caribbean, in Latin America, in Africa, and how it directly related to us, and how our work directly contributed to, you know, their work, and gave the stronger that we were here in the belly of the beast, how much room it allowed others to have to be able to wage, you know, the struggles for national liberation and social transformation in their society, which is still as true today as it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So that's just some snapshot, you know, of what folks, you know, were involved in. And remember, that was a different era. I hope I heard both of y'all talking about COINTELPRO, and that was something not foreign to me as a kid, and definitely not foreign to the family at all.
True indeed. To find this year take place today on a different name, a different ideas. I always realize that everything that we say or do in regards to media, telecommunications, is already confiscated, already infiltrated due to the fact that we're controlling the propaganda and the media, you know. So it's understood to me on that level. So I like, you know, that's an interesting history because I'm somewhat of a history. I have some sort of a history fad myself, right? I love history. And I understand the principles of that, that you speak about, especially in our African People Party, you know what I'm saying? Especially around, as well as the Black Panther Party. You made a distinction. You said Black Power of Self-Defense was a distinctive way to distinguish that. You're not talking about the same as that Black Panther Party, that which was formulated out of RAM, which came from the foundation of the Land Kind of Freedom Organization, that it took place in New York in 1966. Well, it took place before the Black Panther Self-Defense. It took place in October 1966. So that way you had 50-year anniversary, one in New York and one in Oakland. And the self-defense is a distinguishing part, especially in regards to separate the aspects of what Kwame Ture, as well as Baba Dr. Muhammad Akbar, as well as the ancestor Queen Mother Moore set into place with their Black Panther factions as well, as other movements that took the name and, you know what I'm saying, they distinguished the certain lines of political lines that they took, as well as before Mace came out, the African Independent Movement, a lot of coming out of Black Liberation Movement at that time. So that's a lot of history that you were expressing earlier, right? That I'm well aware of, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people need to understand. A lot of people need to understand those types of history in regard to a political education standpoint, to understand exactly where we've been and where we're going to, and where we're evolving to, and different transformation. Like you speak about our corporate rejection. My first question in regards to that is, what is the Cush area? What is the Cush region for the people who don't know? Can you explain it to the people?
Yeah, the Cush region, you know, just to make it simple and plain, it's 18 contiguous counties that stretch from Memphis basically straight down to New Orleans, that straddle the Mississippi River on both sides of the river. Now, the vast majority of these counties are in the Mississippi Delta region, and all of these are majority Black counties. And it's an area geographic in size which is bigger than the Netherlands, which is bigger, you know, than Belgium. So it ain't small. It's a pretty sizable area. And this is a kind of a core heartland, if you would, of what we call the New African National Territory, you know, which is the Republic of New Africa. This is one of the core regions of it. So the Jackson-Cush plan, if you would, is really a transitional plan, you know, that speaks to how to transform those numbers from, you know, just a numerical majority. How do you leverage that number into the developing of real economic and political power. That is roughly what the plan is trying to articulate in some basic outlines when you look at it. But the Kush is that district, you know, of those 18 contiguous counties that's in Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana that straddle the Mississippi River. And the importance of that, just to remind everybody, you know, in terms of history, that is where a great number of our ancestors were concentrated, primarily to cultivate cotton, primarily the northern delta ends, and if you extend it further south, the other concentrated product, cash crop that our folks were forced to cultivate was sugarcane. So those are the two, okay. You know, the two primary products that, you know, they were trying to make these international staple crops to make as much money as possible trading all over the world, with most of the raw materials either being processed, you know, up in the New England region. That's basically, in this case, from Baltimore up to Boston, and if not there, over in England, you know, in terms of sugar, turning that into primarily rum, but also other products. In cotton, that was used primarily to make clothes, rope, and a whole host of other products. You know, they built the modern international economy. And for folks who really want to get a good sense of what we're talking about, there's a book called The Empire of Cotton that recently came out maybe about 2 years ago that I think gives a good breakdown of, you know, not only this trade, but particularly the role that the Kush district played in the actual construction of the world economy that we live with and have to suffer through today, and how this region was very instrumental in this development. And so that's the Kush district. And you know, it's on that basis of what's contained there in terms of land, terms of access to water, and most importantly, our people being concentrated there. That's the focus where we're looking to, you know, build as strong of a base as we can, and then move from there out to liberate more of our people.
Sure, indeed. Sure, indeed. Yeah, I understand. I understand you're African independent, but I'm a country citizen myself. I understand that the independence part, the independent aspect. But what exactly is Cooperation Jackson? What exactly is it? You know, is it a program, or is it an organization, or is it a ideology? What exactly is it?
That's a good question, brother. It's a little bit of all three. But first and foremost, the way we describe it, it's a vehicle to execute and develop a solidarity economy. And solidarity economy, so folks know, have a clear understanding. These are things that we do to build and produce for ourselves on the basis of social solidarity, first and foremost. And the difference between producing for solidarity is that you produce towards equity, you produce towards human need, first and foremost, not for profit. So the solidarity component is standing, you know, with your sister, with your brother, with your community, to figure out what do you need, you know, to make you whole, to make you human, to address your material needs. And how do we produce that together to satisfy our needs? That's the solidarity component, as opposed to a capitalistic orientation, which says, you know, I might meet your needs if your needs and allow me to profit either from your need or from your suffering. And so the solidarity economy piece is trying to orient it towards meeting, you know, human fulfillment. So Cooperation Jackson is a vehicle to help train our people, first and foremost, how to build enterprises and to work cooperatively and democratically together, because that's not something that, unfortunately, we are used to in any extended sense because of how we've been socialized in this capitalist economy and this neoliberal culture the past 30, 40 years. We're not really used to working with each other. We're used to working in competition with each other. So each, you know, for themselves as a, you know, a contrary to the whole. And so we're trying to reorient that, you know, first with training and in the course of, training, of course, is building new institutions. And this is primarily cooperative businesses where people come together without a boss, work together collectively to make, you know, the terms and conditions of how they want to work, when they want to work, what they want to produce, you know, how they want to relate to each other and how they want to relate to the broader world and the broader market, you know, to transform their material reality. So Cooperation Jackson is at one point, you know, an educator, but it's also a developer. And then, you know, I think the deeper component, we talked about it being an ideology, the deeper component of it is it trying to really move people from a capitalistic framework, of course, through political education, but we think the best education is practice, you know, to try to get people to practice working cooperatively with each other, which is harder than it often sounds, truth be told. So we engage in that and trying to develop that as a political framework and an ideology unto itself of working cooperatively, working in solidarity with each other and with our community so we can transform our reality and, again, have the material base to do what we want to do and not be subject to other people's, you know, whims or their wishes or their perverted desires.
Indeed. My next question is, what exactly do the electoral politics fit in the lines of New African Independence or the independent movement from your viewpoint?
Well, I mean, you know, number one, I think from my vantage point, you know, we can't ignore the empire. You know, it has the power to subject us. You know, we see it every day with women and children and men getting killed in cold blood on video, on TV, little, you know, accountability, little, you know, response, let alone anything resembling justice. So we know it's real power. But we should also not have illusions into thinking that it's the only power or that its power is so great that it can't be overcome. Now, I say that to say that I think we have to be strategic, very, very strategic on when and where we enter into the electoral arena of the empire, you know, to because one of the last things, in my view, we want to do is reinforce the power of the empire or legitimize the empire in any form or fashion. And that's a tricky line. When you get into, you know, electoral politics, you have to realize and be honest with yourself and with the people that you are in part saying that this entity called the United States government is a legitimate entity. And it has the right to rule over the land, you know, that it stole from the indigenous people, and it has the right to rule over the people who have been colonized and subject to it. And I don't think we should ever give that much legitimacy. We need to challenge that legitimacy at all points. So for me, you got to be very strategic and engage in the electoral arena when you know there's some clear strategic gains that could be made, and this is strategic in the advance of the cause of social transformation, which involves decolonizing Turtle Island first and foremost, I think, as a principle, and then liberating all the peoples who've been subject to the American empire. So that's us, Puerto Rican, indigenous people, Chicano, Mexicanos, etc., you know, as a principal aim and objective. So for me, you got to really look at the situation in places, say, like Jackson or the Cush area, where we constitute the majority, and we can transform that majority, I think, through some hard organizing work, particularly ideological work within the community, which has to be paramount. That we could utilize that to push the contradictions, of the system and of the society. And if electoral politics can be used to do that, then I think it's advantageous. But engaging in electoral politics to just try to be an instrument of quote-unquote good governance, i.e. managing the system, maybe a little bit better than the people who came before you, I honestly think that's a waste of time, particularly our time, because what you're putting yourself in the position to do is manage the contradictions of capitalism, which in essence can't be managed. People try to, the laws are basically set up to try to tame it or cut its sharp edges here or there. But fundamentally, you can't contain that beast the way the political order is set up. It's fundamentally to serve it and what it wants and what it needs. So we should have no illusions about what we're trying to accomplish should we choose to step in that arena. Now, it was our notion, as a collective notion many years ago, that we could make some strategic advances and we can push the contradictions in a place like Jackson because of its unique history, because of its demographics. But we always caution people that may not work in Atlanta. That may not work, in a Charleston the same way it would work here, because there's other factors that you got to take into account. And for us, there was always the factor of having the rear base of the Cush District, in which we could not only have a sound political basis here through the electoral arena, but we could also have it and do have it in various ways in the Cush District to be a reinforcing tool to draw in resources, both material and human, but also to bring in other resources to bear on the question of should and when we get attacked by our enemies, where might we go to access water? Where might we go to access food? Where might we go to access security? And having that rear base of the church for us, I think, has always been a strategic component that we look at from day one to say this makes sense to do here and to build out from here, again, as a transitional piece, not as the final aim and objective. So that's the thinking, there. I think that still remains true to this day. But I think engaging in electoral politics, of the empire, let me be clear, I think it takes some serious discipline, I think, for us to, and some serious clarity that we got to have, as individuals and as members of movements, I think, to engage in so we don't get confused and lost on our way and wind up serving another agenda rather than serving our own.
That's understood. The next question is, was the Cooperative Jackson founded as a coalition in regards to or a different organization body in regards to the founding of Republic of New Africa? Was it a founder or the line?
It was created to be a mass organization, to bring in as many people in the community as possible. And it's specifically, its orientation is, are you willing to work together in accord towards the mission of developing economic democracy? And were you willing, to basically work on under some core principles, which there were, education of yourself and the community being one, the sovereignty of labor being another key one, that there be, kind of wage solidarity between all the different workers within the cooperative and the cooperative federation. Of course, there'll be open, transparent, and democratic organization and decision-making. Basic open admission for folks to come in regardless of kind of their religious affiliation, et cetera. Participation in management, being that if you walk in, you want to be a part, you're going to take part in all the decisions that take place within the cooperative. And that's a key one because, we've been so educated. You just show up for work and you do what you're told, then you go home. But we want to push the element of self-management and self-development, which means we all got to be involved in the process to both learn and to transform ourselves. Another critical component, you know, is that we try to subordinate, as I was speaking to earlier, subordinate capital, you know, to the dictate of the workers themselves, to the support, make capital a servant of labor and not the other way around. You know, and then we try to push, you know, overall social transformation. Now, you know, anybody who walks into the community and says that they can, you know, kind of get down with those pieces, fundamentally, Cooperation Jackson is open to. Now, there's ways in which we have to hold each other accountable towards practice within that, with respect to treating each other with dignity, treating each other with fairness and respect. So there's additional, you know, kind of operational principles, you know. But the organization was set up to involve the masses of people in this type of economic development and activity. Now, that doesn't mean that there was not a guiding vision or that there was no kind of guiding organization behind it. You know, for myself being a key leader in it, you know, coming out of a revolutionary organization as a founding kind of guiding light and orientation point within it, that was there, and that was there intentionally. You know, so it's not to dominate, it's to like guide in accordance with, there's this overall strategy and plan of the Jackson Cush plan, and how does this help and enable that? So the piece that we always try to ground in building this in was to keep the eye on those principles as it relates to the economics itself. But to always the final piece in on this piece around social transformation is, okay, what are we doing this for? You know, where are we trying to get to at the end of the day? And, you know, we don't want to just, you know, create some new entity just for the sake of doing business. We want our human labor to lead us towards liberating ourselves and not be continually at the service of somebody else for their profits and their pleasure. You know, so in that sense, it's very broad, but it also has a very, you know, specific anchor to it. Which is helping to advance, you know, the liberation of African people, and particularly, you know, the liberation of, as we see it, the new African national territory. So, you know, Cooperation Jackson is firmly anchored in that. You know, and as long as we do our work right, it will always be anchored in that. But that's you know, we always got to be mindful that's contingent on how well we do the political education. Over the generations, you know, because we've seen many an organization, you know, get institutionalized and formal and then give up its politics in order to enter into the mainstream. You know, we see that with some other big cooperative enterprises around the world. So the only way you can really mitigate that over time is intense political and ideological struggle, and that's something we intend on waging throughout the course of its life, you know. But there's something that, truth be told, you know, we'll have to see in 20 years how well we've done that work and how well we've anchored people in sound practice and sound ideological development so that they don't make short-sighted decisions, you know, that bend towards fulfilling the needs of capital in order to, you know, make a little bit more chump change to put in their pockets. You know, which we've seen over the course of history. So being students of history, you know, we are mindful of that, and we're trying to build that in at some corrective, you know, but that's where having a relationship with formations, you know, like PG and other organizations is critical. You know, while we try to recruit members from those different organizations to play a leading role in the development of the cooperatives and other supporting solidarity institutions that we build. So there's a constant reinforcement of the vision and the principles and the politics and the ideology, which are grounding the work, you know, and through that work, you know, try to get others who aren't necessarily students of those politics to gradually understand them through the course of interacting with people and doing the day-to-day work, you know, be it, you know, making food or be it growing food or doing security work or working, you know, you know, our community production cooperative, where the constant questions are always put out, you know, what are we here to do? Why are we doing this? You know, and to constantly reinforce that, you know, through the daily grind, through the daily struggle, and through the daily education that that struggle, you know, in gender basics.
Oh, but okay. I need to cut in. Sorry to interrupt. I need to cut in just for 1 second. We're having some slight technical difficulties with the website. So in the next, like, maybe 1 or 2 minutes, if anybody gets cut off, please call right back in. We're having just a slight technical difficulty with the website this evening.
Okay.
So go ahead, brother.
Okay, I appreciate it, brother.